This is the Coin It Podcast, sponsored by CoinCosmo.com. Have fun like a collector. Think like an investor. Whether you're just a hobbyist or looking for an alternative investment with rare coins, paper money, NFTs, or art, your host, Charles Jonath, is covering it all. Now your host, Charles Jonath.
All right, we're here with Josh Scott, Captain Redbeard. The Captain Redbeard, and also he has his company Commodore Coins. He's into all sorts of things, but mainly it seems like you're big into shipwrecks and gold escudos and stuff like that. Hence the Captain Redbeard. I mean, what's it all about, pirate treasure? I know briefly about these type of things, and I have a decent amount of knowledge about it, but I'm no expert in cobs or gold escudos or shipwreck gold or anything like that. So, but I find the whole field of coins, that specific field, very interesting. It's just, it's amazing stuff. These coins have tremendous history. I mean, how did you kind of get into all the shipwreck thing, and what kind of led you towards, oh, this is something I could really get into?
Yeah, well, I started collecting when I was a kid. My grandfather was huge into it. He did it with my dad. My dad grew up most of his life going to the Long Beach show here in California. Ever since, you know, the early days of it. So, but they were more into U.S. coins and everything about them. And I always was around it, and I loved the history of it, but. For me, you know, growing up on movies like The Goonies, and then when Pirates of the Caribbean came out, and Indiana Jones, all that stuff, just the idea of going and finding treasure and the history around it was the most fascinating piece of it. You know, our history here in the U.S. is pretty much starts at the golden age of piracy.
Absolutely.
To be perfectly honest. And so everything around that, like when we first are coming to this new world, Spain's already been here and they've been mining all this stuff, and they're coming out with all this beautiful treasure.
Yeah.
And like around the time that the Pilgrims are just now setting down, we've already had the Atocha sink.
Yeah. So, think about that. That's crazy.
It's
right?
Just wild. And so that stories like that really drew me in, and it was really the first kickoff of the whole me getting more into that side of collecting over the U.S. stuff. Was I had a friend of mine who him and his dad have been doing specifically the gold and all the treasure. They'd been doing it for years, and he came over for a Christmas party, and he's wearing an 8 escudo around his neck. And I was like, man, you got to tell me more.
Yeah.
And so he just started telling the whole story, you know, talking about all the big wrecks and everything around that lore, which I already knew the history of that period, but I didn't know the specifics of certain wrecks and, you know, everything that went along with that time period. So actually then for the first time holding an 8 escudo, a Lima from the fleet, and being able to check that out and see, like, dude, I need
crazy,
more.
Man.
I need this. So I ended up selling almost all of my U.S. stuff, liquidating all of it, and diving straight into this whole realm. And my dad still is, you know, big in the U.S. stuff. He loves it. But we had over the years decided, like, hey, let's start focusing more on one area instead of just collecting all sorts of U.S. stuff. No real rhyme or reason to it.
Right.
And we decided, you know what? Let's get into pirate treasure. Why not? And so we found that, you know, just watching the trends when we first really started collecting about in this market, started collecting about 5 years ago, I really started heavily diving into it.
Nice.
And that's when I realized not just from the cool factor and the history, because that's my biggest thing first and foremost is the history of the piece, but then seeing, oh my gosh, the amount of money that you can make on some of this stuff, the market is just insane.
Sure.
And over, especially during the past couple of years of COVID, I mean, we found that the coins I was buying before COVID, you know, just even mainland Spain, Seville, 2 escudos. I mean, I was spending $1,200 to $1,500 for a 2 escudo, and now you can't touch them for less than $3,000.
Yeah.
And so it's like stuff that, you know, now it's harder. And guys who yep. can't get their hands on the fleet stuff, the stuff that's just skyrocketed, mm-hmm. now are buying up all the earlier dated stuff, 1556 to 98. And now it's even getting harder to find that. Mm-hmm. And guys are going earlier to the 1516 to 1556. So,
yeah.
you know, anything with a good gold cross on the back of it is hot.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly on it.
I absolutely. I mean, it, you really see that. I notice like people gravitate towards like the Lima Mint, the eight Escudo. Yeah. I mean that the premiums have got pretty steep on it, but still, I mean, I get why they're paying high for it, just because like, I feel like if you see a lot of Cobbs, you know, the strike is just probably the most important. If you could see like emblems and stuff from the shield and identify key markers of what they're trying to display, like with the lions versus the type, the different cross variations, sure. the more detail there, the more people are going to pay out of these things. So
absolutely. And well, and one thing that's really unique specifically to this area of the world coin market is I found that, you know, in any other market you see, I always like to get my stuff graded. I mean, I'm a firm believer in getting it certified, PCGS, NGC, Annex, any of them, get it graded so guys know that it's not getting faked.
Yeah.
Because of, I would say almost more than any other area, shipwreck era coins
oh, yeah.
are getting faked Tons. All over the world.
For sure.
So, you know, it gives you that peace of mind. On the other hand, I love to physically hold it and, you know, having holding a piece that's been under the sea for so long. But the one unique thing I find and that I love in this market is that even though on a slab it may say cleaned, that doesn't really detract from the value, because all of these coins, especially sea salvage, of course they're going to get cleaned.
Yeah,
unless you're getting like a greenie and it's still covered in little bits of seashell and dirt and sand. That's cool. Yeah.
I mean, they've been underneath the ocean for God knows how long. So
And so it's so much more common to get something details, which honestly, it doesn't really take that much away from it. I mean, you'll see a, you know, you might see a fine details, but it's from the 1715 fleet. And now you're looking at a $1,000 coin, whereas compared maybe a fine details, not from the fleet, even shipwreck, you're looking at maybe 100 to 400 bucks. So it's just, it's crazy. I mean, I love it. Because
it seems like, and I'm curious to get your opinion on this. It seems like that the value is in the strike and then the color, like if the gold still has a richness to it, you know, and it's not too washed out, especially in silver, like silver, I look for the ones that look more natural looking, that don't have as much salt water, erosion.
Yeah. And one thing that I tend to not try and buy a lot of the slabbed, you know, sea salvage silver pieces that are so cleaned that you're looking at
it's just all washed
like
out,
like a shiny piece of a bullion, you know, I don't like something that's so shiny, which is great for that, for what, you know, bullion is, but I want something that has the depth of character of the toned silver in the devices. It's almost black, but it's making all the high points a little shinier. So it's like the ultimate piece of pirate treasure, getting to see all the high points in there. So, you know, depending on how long since it was recovered from the fleet, let's say it was pulled up in the 80s and some guy had it in his collection for years near other silver, or possibly, you know, like a lot of times with the US stuff when they were kept in, you know, bags that had possible traces of phosphorus or sulfur, and you get those tones, colors, you know, some of that stuff is great and I love it.
But, absolutely.
You know, on top of just, you know, getting the beautiful tones and colors, you'll never see two pieces of Spanish silver alike, at least when it comes to the Cobbs.
Yeah.
And that's what is my favorite whole piece of it is you'll always keep finding that next piece. Oh, I got to have that one.
Right.
Because, you know, that one's got a heavier, stronger struck cross on it. But, you know, the backside is not so good, but hey, you know, this might make a cool pendant if it's, you know, not really worth slabbing and preserving.
It's that gritty hand struck thing. You know what I mean? Like they just went there, discovered that gold and with no real tools and just figured it out. They figured out a way to make the money divisible, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, what's so fascinating too, is it just the strike and the, how beautiful some of the early pieces are. I mean, you're looking at, like, my favorite probably of the Spanish, the whole reign, is you've got the, like, the Star of Lima. You got the Diego de la Torre stripes. I mean, this guy is so meticulous on their stripes of these coins, and they had that beautiful little star on some of the pieces that you can see, that it blows away anything for the next 100 years yeah. on what these guys are making. And this is in the mid 1500s and they're stamping this stuff out. Like, I've got crazy. A few finest knowns and only, you know, only one or two in population. And the fact that this stuff is mint state and survived 450 years and now it's here. It just, the yeah. stories these pieces must tell. It's just, I love it. I cannot get enough of it.
That's awesome, man. I mean, it's really cool that you got into that and you're a West Coast guy. Like,
yeah,
not a lot, you know, most of the people that collect that stuff tend to be in Florida or in Caribbean region or even international customers. Now, like, there's a Latin American population that's collecting this stuff as well. So, I mean, you know, most of those collectors are on the East Coast, you know, so to have someone in yeah. Florida, I mean, to have someone in the West Coast that's heavily into shipwreck stuff is kind of cool. That's unique, I think.
Yeah. And there's probably a handful of us here in California.
Really?
But I've met a few guys that are on this side that are doing it. But honestly, all of the guys that I end up selling stuff to, they're, for the most part, I'd say 90% are in Florida.
Really?
And a lot of guys are looking to make jewelry out of stuff. And, you know, uh-huh. I'm the kind of guy, I don't care either way. If I'm selling you the piece and you're enjoying it, I mean, you can slab it, you can wear it around your neck. As long as you're happy and you love the history as much as I do, that's all that really matters. Right. And so a lot of the guys are coming out of the Keys, Miami, Palm Beach, all those areas. That's yeah. where a lot of my stuff ends yeah. up going. But I'm having to now find stuff and get creative to even get more inventory because
yeah, it's difficult.
Whether it's all the beautiful stuff you're seeing on Heritage or on Stacks or any of these other big auctions, the prices are getting so high that at the end of the day, I don't want to be so soaked in it that I'm not going to be able to flip it down the road.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Who knows what the market's going to do in a couple of years. I would love if it kept going up, but
you don't know. Yeah. It's hard to say because, I think it's going to depend on how much, collector driven the market is and how much there are other people just dabbling in it.
Totally.
You know, I think if people are buying these pieces and then to plan to put them away, then I don't see price changing much. The problem is not going to be price. It's just going to be accessibility of the pieces.
Right.
You know,
and the other thing that I've noticed that has really spurred on the market as a whole is not just the notoriety of the shipwrecks that have already been recovered, but the new shipwrecks coming out that these guys are finding, as well as anything in the media. So, you know, they're in talks with doing another Pirates of the Caribbean movie. When that comes out, it all of a sudden, all the idea of pirate treasure and Spanish colonial loot is coming back up to the forefront of everyone's mind. And everybody wants a piece of that realm.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the big wrecks that we've been watching, that me and some of my buddies and my business partner have been watching, is, you know, all the notoriety around the San Jose. You know, that is the holy grail of shipwrecks. And I don't know if you've looked too much or seen too much of the history on that whole thing that's coming out, but, you know, you're looking at the biggest shipwreck that we've ever discovered. And the most gold that's ever been found. I mean, it's crazy. Atocha and the 1715 fleet to shame. Wow. I mean, they're estimating $17 billion in gold on this thing.
Jeez.
I think they said that last estimates I saw, they said that they think there's equivalent of somewhere around 7 to 11 million pieces of gold down at the bottom of the ocean.
That's insane, man. It's these type of things, to be honest with you, that is probably why we're speaking English as opposed to Spanish.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's all
they
the
lost
fact that,
fortunes, the yeah. span, the Spanish, you know,
and imagine at that time, if we equate that back to this, that time period's worth, what did that do to the economy?
I mean, absolutely.
Something like that just obliterated them. And reasons why that is why then, you know, we have the Dutch really coming up and we have the English and the French are able to now kind of level the playing field because
absolutely
their flagship exploded and sunk to the bottom of the ocean, 2,000 feet deep, yeah, or, you know, a couple thousand feet deep. And it's all preserved. If you look up some pictures, you see the wood, the hull of that vessel is still intact.
Wow, that's crazy, though. I can't believe the wood. You would think the wood would be like some of the first to go.
Yeah, and usually it is. You know, in shallower waters, you have those woodworms that will eat it away. And over time, if the temperature of the water isn't just right, it'll be completely obliterated. But I've seen, you know, over the last 10, 20 years, I've seen all these different research reports. Guys have found ships from the Greeks in the Black Sea that are so deep and so dark that nothing down there really lives. And they found full vessels with amphora still on there, filled with stuff. It's the deeper you go, the more it's going to preserve it. And the fact that they found this, and hopefully we'll actually get to see the treasure. I don't see it hitting the market. You know, if it does, it's going to be in small quantities, but most likely, even if it goes into a museum, I just hope that the public gets to see that kind of history preserved, because to tell that story is just so cool to me.
Yeah. It's going to be, that's fascinating, man. It's going to be interesting to see. I think it has to do with a lot on how they find these discoveries. Like, with the thing is, like, there's a lot of Atosha coins that hit the marketplace because I think the searching for that shipwreck, they took on a lot of investment. And the investors were sold on that. Okay, once this treasure becomes available, you know, collectors will pay for it.
Yeah.
So, but I'm not sure exactly how the financing to discover the San Jose, or if it was just by accident. I don't know a lot of the details behind it, but I think it's going to probably depend on largely on, you know, how financially motivated this whole excavation is, you know?
Well, and it, specifically with that wreck, it turned into an international thing. So now you've got Spain saying it's theirs. You've got Colombia saying it's in our waters.
Wow,
and you've got I think it was a team from here in the U.S. that actually found it. And they want a piece of it, at least, just for their efforts. But it's so deep that you can't dive for it. You have to send submarines down to actually recover this stuff. So
that's insane,
it's a monumental ordeal. And now, from my understanding, is the Colombian government, they have the Navy out there basically patrolling the area to make sure nobody dives down there because of how much wealth is sitting there. And for the most part, I believe it's all mint state, all 1708 and earlier pieces of gold. So you're looking at just an unbelievable amount of treasure.
Yeah.
Which would be cool to see. I hope it does get recovered wherever it goes.
Yeah. If it gets to Colombia, they'll probably going to be pieces that hit the market at some point, but that's probably going to take a long time.
It will. Yeah. And let's just say they are able to recover it in the next 5 years. Think that, you know, 15 years out, what's that going to do to our market? Suddenly, eight escudos from the fleet that are bringing upwards of $40,000 to $90,000 a piece, the market's going to be immediately flooded with these things if they don't do it right. If Colombia just says we want to liquidate this just to pay for a museum and to get money in our economy, even if they liquidate half of that, and we're still looking at, you know, 7 to 10 million pieces of gold, that the market will immediately be saturated. All the prices will plummet.
That's what happened with ancients, you know? Yeah. So like, if you look at the history, the Roman coinage in the 70s was more expensive than largely what it is now. So, and you had a similar market, like the shipwreck market that was happening for Roman coins in the 70s. But once they started, you know, doing excavations, and they found so many Roman coins, that it just, you know, now you could get Roman coins for like $10.
Yeah. And now you really, the big ticket ones are the emperor that they were tied to.
Right.
It's so versus, you know, if they got notoriety, if it's Nero or if it's Julius Caesar, anything that's, you know, you got some good money. But, you know, some of the pieces that I like, I do have a few ancients. I've dabbled in that. You know, some of the ones, you get these staters that were, there was a horde found a number of years ago, you might be familiar with, that was, they were able to attribute to Brutus when he went and tried to get King Coson to be able to pay for him to go with an army to step in and become emperor himself, and then he gets wiped out, and he just disappears. Well, when they found all the money that they would bury before battle to pay the soldiers, they found, I don't know, several thousand of these coins, and it flooded the market. And now they're a cool piece of history to have, but it's nothing like a $20,000 coin because they found, I don't know how many of them. So.
Sure. No, absolutely. But I think also ancients is a good learning lesson from what not to do, but it's also a good learning lesson from what to do, because the quality stuff is, you know, gotten more expensive. I mean,
of course,
you always have to look at the quality. I think if you go for the best quality, you're less at danger of getting hurt by the market.
Absolutely.
And over time, you know, if you're willing to hold this stuff, you can deal with the swings because you have an amazing quality piece. Like, any, even if you're going to spend a lot of money on an Aedes Scudo, make sure it has top quality, that it, all the strike is there, and then the color, it has good eye appeal. You know, all the things you would want to buy in a traditional, a really nice coin, you know what I mean? So it's just applying that to this specific area of numismatics and staying away from, you know, the generic stuff, the washed out, you know, silver just to buy a cob. I mean, if you're going to pay a high premium, it's probably not going to be worth it in the long run, as more of the stuff, if it gets discovered, it just, you know, the prices go down the market because there's more availability.
Yeah. Well, not one thing that has always drawn me to the ancients, whereas I don't really deal as much in it. I do, I'll buy, you know, the best that I can for when I find a piece, do a little research on it first, tell the story behind it. But the fact that some of these pieces are 2000 to 4000 years old compared to 500 years old in the Spanish colonial realm, it's just the fact that pieces lasted 3 to 4 times longer than what I'm really collecting now is just a testament to just how cool the history is and how well they were doing it back then, even better than they're doing it in the early Spanish colonial times. It's just amazing.
Absolutely. Well, the metals can be preserved like that over time and underground. Like paper, think about that. If all, like, we now we're in the digital world, but if all the servers were to go down, I mean, you probably wouldn't, there would be no resemblance of most of this stuff after hundreds, if not thousands of years. But the actual coins and stone, you know, writing on stone, I don't know. There's a lot to be said about some of that stuff. It's interesting. It really lasted the test of time because of the materials which they chose to do all this stuff with. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating feeling. That's good. So you've kind of riding the wave now. The market is really growing and stuff for the shipwreck stuff. And I think with everything, like U.S. type coins, it's the same, I feel. And most of the stuff, world coins in general is starting its little uprise. I mean, there's so many things that are going up right now in the world of coins. But I'm just curious, and I'm interested to see what your opinion is, because I think...
Sure.
I don't know if it seems to be collector driven, which makes me happy, because I think if real collector growth is what's fueling this, then there's sustainability to these prices. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's just people dabbling because they want to send money elsewhere, or they're coming, you know, from crypto or whatever, then that drives a lot of speculation. And then, you know, we could see potentially a crash, but if it's just growth in collectors, you know, fueled by the internet, that's a good thing. That's a positive for us.
Absolutely. And I'm finally been seeing over the last few years, a lot of younger collectors coming into the market, which is so cool. The fact that our hobby that we love so much, we're getting younger guys and gals into this that really care about the history and, you know, playing with the market and what does it look like at a young age. I mean, I've dealt with some kids on Instagram, some sales that are like 15, 14, 15, 16. I'm just like, dude, I was stuck playing video games.
Absolutely. At that time. Yeah,
I wasn't even, had no, no idea about this world. And Instagram's really helped that. I mean, these kids are able to start building not just their knowledge of history, but how to do business. And that's, I think that we got some really good up and comers for the whole market. Cause when I had gone to trade shows as a kid, I would never see anybody my age at these shows. It was guys my grandfather's age and, you know, my dad's age at these places. And now I'm seeing younger guys running booths. It's just so much fun. I love seeing them being able to kill it in this field.
Yeah.
And being able to like, hey, this is my niche. And I love this area of US coins. I love these kind of ancients, or, you know, especially the kids who are really into the pirate treasure and are asking me questions. And yeah, some of them know way more than I do on you know, certain assayers and chop marks and test cuts. And they just geek out over it. And I'm, you know, we're all piggybacking off each other. And it's just, you know, guys like Sedgwick had set that bar like, hey, this is what's out there. And when I got the hand on their book and got to read through it, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so much to learn about this whole world. And I'm learning every day so much more.
Right. Well, they're like the top, I think, for shipwreck stuff. I mean, they worked on all so much research and stuff between Daniel and his father. And then, you know, they do all the auctions, and they're probably the main market maker for that stuff in the States. And then also too, my buddy Jeff at Premier is really knowledgeable on some of the shipwreck stuff, and they do that as well.
But Jeff and I talk once in a while, and I see the stuff that he's got. It's just like,
really
I need to make a trip just to come see you and just trade treasure stories, because I mean,
oh my god,
the three around the same age, and just I want to geek out with him.
Absolutely,
I got nobody here to do it.
No, he's a great guy, man. He's awesome. He's the best. I have so much fun with him and Cody.
Yeah,
but
yeah, and we chat, and I think probably the next fun show will be a good one. I mean, I've never had the chance. If something always comes up, whether it's the summer or the winter fun, so I'll be at the winter fun show finally.
Good.
You know, next year. Beginning, so that'll be a good awesome. Time, but
I'll be there as well, dude. We'll do something
good. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to get a couple beers and trade treasure stories.
Absolutely. So but what's new for you? What's on the horizon here for Commodore?
Yeah, so what I found is that coins are amazing, but it's only telling one piece of that history of that era. So I love collecting all the artifacts around it. And, you know, for example, I've got this map behind me. This map was done in around the 1640s. It's a Vischer map. This one was done, it's all in Latin, and on the back of it is in Dutch. And so a lot of these maps, a lot of the guys who geek out over maps and things like that, they were all done and made into large atlases, like a huge book. Uh-huh. Some of them, they varied in sizes. Some were really big, so others were not. This specific one was in a pretty decent size map. So like if you look at it, imagine that map folds into two, and the book would be about this big, wrapped either in leather, some kind of vellum would be on the outside. Uh-huh. And they would, you know, bind it with some kind of thread or a glue substance. But I actually buy a ton of maps through, there's a really amazing guy, here in town, called Barry Ruderman. And it's, if you look up raremaps.com, he is the foremost map expert in the world. Everybody buys from him. He sells to Library of Congress and to the Smithsonian and the British Museum all over the world. They get his maps. And
wow, that's incredible.
There's a few other experts out there, but this guy is the best. So I get to go there. I'll drive to his shop and get to see and touch this stuff that's 400 years old older. And, you know, so I started collecting maps, and which is a whole nother thing. And I got a guy locally who frames stuff for Barry, and he frames for me now as well. Awesome. And so I'm framing stuff. And now I got guys buying maps off me, and
that's fascinating.
Something that's, you know, really the only type of item from that period that's paper that you're going to be able to, that has stood the test of time and survived. And what's cool about a lot of these maps is they were going onto ships. This specific map was more probably would have been in an office. It doesn't have your longitude, latitude lines. It doesn't have your charts and stuff like that. I'll get maps that are completely covered in lines for charting with the stars and know where you're going. But most of these were made by the Dutch for the East India Trading Company, or they were made in England, same thing, because they were pumping out for the British East India Company. And the fact that, you know, you can have these maps that would have been used on these ships to just to go over to the New World and do all sorts of trade, was whether it was, you know, soft goods to coins and whatever, that they were using these maps back then. It's
That's
just
incredible.
So cool. And so on the back of them, like this one specifically does not, because it wasn't in one of those descriptive charts. But other ones I have on the back of them, I'll actually get framed and I'll have it open in clear glass so you can see. And it's either written in Latin or Dutch, and it tells you the story of what area you're looking at. Like, for example, I have a map that specifically shows the north coast of South America and a little bit of Mexico, Panama, and a little bit of the islands of the Caribbean. And on the back in Dutch, it tells all about this area. It tells you about, you know, these islands and this is what you find there. I've got all sorts of wild stuff, but they do have a map there that it's a dream to have, but it's $500,000 map. Wow. And it was actually, it's on vellum, a giant piece of animal hide, and it has pinholes and it has provenance to a Dutch East India Company that was on their wall or on a table. And it's of the whole world with chart lines and everything. It's enormous. This thing is
insane. And that guy's got it by you. Yeah, wow. Yeah.
It's like 6 feet tall by 10 feet long. It's enormous, and maybe a little bit smaller. Maybe it's like a 6 foot by eight, something like that, but it's huge. And the fact that they were so good, and it was all hand, like this was all done by hand.
Yeah.
And all the painting and the coloring and stuff was all done by hand. And they would do it on like a copper plate, press it. And then, so all of them have different paint colors. So whatever color they were feeling at that time. And sometimes you'll get lucky with gold filigree. But then on the other side, my business partner is Sean Rich from Tortuga Trading. And you've probably seen him on Pawn Stars.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Stuff like that. He is one of the foremost experts on arms, armament, coins, all that stuff, pretty much throughout history. And we actually live about half an hour from each other, a little less.
Oh,
and
nice.
So we partner up on all sorts of stuff. He doesn't really have too much of a presence on Instagram right now. Mm-hmm. He has so much other stuff to do. So I list a lot of his stuff. And I show off treasures. He's got huge clumps of 1715 fleet cobs, just still encrusted together. Wow. I've got giant jars filled with coins, that were recovered from a wreck, in the South China Sea, just flintlocks that are the most beautiful, intricate designs, and some of the coolest treasure chests, authentic chests, which is another piece I've been getting into, because what better place to keep all your pirate loot than an actual pirate chest from the 1600s? So learning That's the history great. Behind that. And, you know, that was one fascinating thing I found with the treasure chests, is that for the most part, wooden chests were not common to be used, at least to transport large quantities. There have been instances that they have found some of these wooden chests on certain wrecks that were so buried deep that they had actually preserved and survived. But you're looking at smaller chests, no bigger than like a little foot locker. But to transport the large quantities, they would put them in giant armada chests that would sometimes take one or two keys to open. And I've got a few of them here. If I had a bigger space to show you, I could probably try and lift them up, but they're about 250 pounds empty.
Oh my gosh.
And just beautifully done. The same guys who are making the suits of armor were making these treasure chests and making the keys. And so looking at every piece, that's being able to put it all together. Like, I'll take pictures where I'll just fill up a treasure chest, one of these big ones, with silver and gold and chains. And I've got flintlocks from that period. I'll put them all in there. Just being able to paint a picture of something that could have been on a ship at that time.
Right.
Dude, there's nothing cooler. It's insane. To be able to paint that whole bit of history, it'd just be like if you were collecting the ancients and you were able to have like a Roman dagger and maybe some jewelry from that period.
Yeah.
Just being able to paint that whole picture is the coolest thing. It's like having a little museum at
your house. That's the crazy thing. Like, when it comes to ancient artifacts like that, from the Roman era, the coins are relatively cheap compared to if you had a figurine. Oh my God. It's like ridiculous money.
Yeah. Well, and occasionally I'll buy some of that ancient jewelry. I only do it if it's, I know it, the provenance is there, but
yeah,
I do absolutely have a couple pieces. Like I love wearing, I don't do it all the time, but I love wearing some of the Roman gold rings, Greek stuff. I have a pendant that kind of don't want to sell cause it's so cool. But I have it in a box near me. But it's a, it's from, it was excavated outside Rome. And it's equivalent of about 18 carat, as close as they could have gotten. And it looks like a crescent moon. And it was made to be worn at the time. And they found it in these ruins. And it went to an auction in England. And I was able to purchase it. And my wife likes to wear it. So I let her wear the treasure sometimes. And yeah. So it's, and that's nice. how I get away with some of this. If she likes it, then
it's okay. Yeah, it helps, right? For sure, man. Well, that's so cool, man. There's... You know, and it, the whole map thing is really interesting too. Like I have a lot of old bonds and stuff that were used to finance like big parks in certain cities and public thing, like almost like would be the equivalent of modern day municipals.
Sure.
And they're actually, you know, the paper cutouts of them and everything. And it's really fascinating because it's like the history of how things were financed. So, I mean, but I think the maps go hand in hand. Like if you could find a map that was on a ship, it goes right together with your shipwreck coin. So
100%. I mean, it's stuff like that $500,000 map is, you know, if you were to have that same map, but it wasn't tied to any other ship, you know, you're probably looking at a fraction of that price.
Right.
But it's just like with like the wreck of the Whydah that they found off Cape Cod. I mean, when they proved that it was a pirate shipwreck and it wasn't just another Spanish vessel, immediately you're looking, you know, at an 8 real, the ones that rarely come to auction. You're looking at a coin that to any other day might be, you know, $500 to $800 for that one of those, you know, nice, let's just say it was a Potosi 8 real. You're looking at $10,000 for the few that they actually sold to investors. So the provenance is everything. And that's why, you know, I try and tell the stories because I care so much more about the history and the story of it than I do about making a buck that, you know, I'm going to go towards those pieces that, that to me speak to me. So that's why I'm collecting flintlocks and I've got rum bottles off shipwrecks and that's treasure chests and the maps. All of it, anything.
I'd love to see that. I didn't see the rum bottles. Are they on your Instagram?
Yeah, I've got them way back. I posted them a long time ago, but I've got
a few. I'll try and find them.
Yeah, I've got some rum bottles. I've got case gin bottles that look really beautiful, long rectangular bottles. Mm-hmm. And then I've got ones that almost look like beer bottles that could have been for any other liquor, and they're totally covered in coral and encrusted. So you're getting cool history from that whole thing.
That's awesome, man. All right. So Josh, how do we find you online?
Yeah. So I would say the easiest way, if you ever want to get a hold of me or if you're looking for anything, or you just want to see some fun pictures that I take, look at Red Beard Coins on Instagram. I do have a page for my company for Commodore Coins. You can type that into Instagram as well. Don't post as much on there, but it's got the links to everything. CommodoreCoins.com is my site. I haven't posted even a fraction of what I've got. I've got about 1,000 cobs I have to get through, and it takes a long time to post everything. Everything from the little fragment pieces to, you know, the most beautiful 8 reals you've ever seen. So constantly doing that. And then my business partners page, if you really want to see some unique other pieces, as well as jewelry and stuff, is TortugaTrading.com. Sean's pretty much one of the experts out there, and I would challenge pretty much anybody else to have the same kind of stuff that he's got. It's like walking into a museum. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it. I had fun and I hope to see you. I want to see you if you come out to fun. So
yeah,
should definitely try and make it out there.
I'm actually trying to book my flights this week. So,
awesome.
So I'll be out there and we'll have to get some dinner and hang out and meet up with the other guys. Would be great.
Absolutely. All right, Josh, it was a pleasure and we'll be in touch. All right.
Absolutely.
Captain Redbeard. Check out his page. He's got really cool stuff on there. If you want to see some cool pirate treasure or really cool cobs and shipwreck stuff, check out his Instagram. It's awesome. All right, man. Take it easy.
Thanks, brother.
Later.